Good afternoon, little children. It's June 4th, 2023, 1421 hours. Ward Green here. This song is from 1968 by The Band, as they were called. And it's written by Robbie Robertson. It's called The Wait.
Take me down the line. I beg
Well, that was something that I listened to that song for many years, of course. Since 1968, I've heard it quite a few times, but not that it's the most popular song, but it did get some, it was a number six hit on the hit parade in the United Kingdom in 1969. That's not the one. I'm looking at something else here. What am I looking at? I'm not going to tell you what that is just yet. Let me see. It's 1968. This is the one. Yeah. Now, this was a hit. It did get airplay. It's a great song, but first of all, but Pitchfork Media named it the 13th best song of the 1960s, the 13th best song. And it's listed as number 41 on Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs of All Time, published in 2004. This song, The Weight, as it's called, I mean, I tend to think of it as being Take a Load Off Fanny, is what it sounds like. It's should be the name, but it's called The Weight. And that was their first, it was a song, that's right. It was a single. Their first release under the name The Band, too, it says here in Wikipedia. It was written by Robbie Robertson. I may have mentioned that. Maybe not, though. But Robbie Robertson is a Canadian, so that's significant. And The Band, we thought of the band as being Canadian. They worked for Bob Dylan as his band for a while. They were well known in the music industry by a lot of different artists. Eric Clapton, I think Van Morrison, when they did their final movie that they made called The Last Waltz, that was sort of a big concert that they gave that was made into a movie that they planned to make into a movie, and they did a complete audio production of it, and Van Morrison was in that, but there were many other stars in that. I'm trying to remember who some of them were. I think Neil Diamond was in that. I know a lot of other big stars were in that, in the music business, big stars, that is, big stars in the music business. Ronnie Hawkins was the person with whom the band started as a group. They started with Ronnie Hawkins, and so Ronnie Hawkins was in that movie too. There were so many different people in that movie called The Last Waltz. It's a fantastic movie with live music. It's all sorts of songs that they perform with these other performers. I'm not sure if all the songs they do are originals by the band either. I think they do a lot of great classic songs maybe that aren't written all by the band. But let's not digress too far here. But that's something I don't have time to do all the time, is research and study all the music from great performers, which would be nice if we had time for that all the time. Anyway, chapter 10 of part 2 of Wild Road, paragraph 12. There are many details of pyramid and ziggurat aspects discussed by Sir Norman Lockyer in his book. And there's a book by Samuel Lang called Human Origins, which contains related information about these things. Of art in Old Kingdom Egypt, for example, Lang says, a visit to the Museum of Boulak, where Mariette's collection of works of the first six dynasties is deposited, will convince anyone that the statues, statuettes, wall pictures, and other works of art of the ancient empire from Memphis and its cemetery of Saqqara are in point of conception and execution superior to those of a later period. None of the later statues equal the tour de force by which the majestic portrait statue of Chephren, the builder of the second great pyramid, has been chiseled out from a block of diorite, one of the hardest stones known and hardly assailable by the best modern tools. From Human Origins, 1892, by Samuel Lang. The names of the 7 days of the week are obtainable using the 24 hours of the day used in Babylonia, using each hour a different heavenly body in succession, the seven heavenly bodies being Saturn, Jupiter, Mars, the Sun, Venus, Mercury, the Moon, ordered by orbit size, the Sun being the largest orbit, and Jupiter second, Mars third, sorry, Saturn being the largest. Jupiter, Mars, then the Sun, that's the Earth's orbit, in other words, Venus, and then Mercury, and then the Moon. The sizes of the orbits decreasing in succession there. So each day starting, thus third next to the previous day. If we take, for example, we start with Mars. Mars is Mardi, Tuesday in French. So the next third one over would be Mercury. And Mercury is Mercredi, which is Wednesday in French. The next third one over, the Moon, Saturn, Jupiter would be Jupiter. If we go in a cycle there, Jupiter is Jeudi, or Thursday in French. And the third next one after Jupiter is Mars, the Sun, Venus. Venus is as Vendredi, or French, for Friday. Saturn for Saturday was the dimmest planet visible and was an omen for the Sabbath being a day of abstinence. So from where we were there, where were we? Vendredi. We go Mercury, the Moon, and then Saturn. So we go, it continues the pattern. And from Saturn, which is Saturday, we go Jupiter, Mars, the Sun. We get to Sunday. And then from Sunday, we go Venus, Mercury, the Moon. We get to Monday. Those being more in English than in French. The Saturday through Monday days of the week. Sir Norman Lockyer states that there was undoubtedly a race of equinox worshippers and pyramid builders found in Shinar, or Babylonia, at the time of Egypt's pyramids. This is consistent with the Bible and with the BG, for the Tower of Babel at Shinar came before Egypt. So when Egypt came into being, of course it would seem reasonable that there were still people living in Shinar. Lockyer's book is far too sophisticated astronomically for superficial analysis to do justice to, as are also his dates and Mr. Lang's far too ancient to be used appropriately. Which is to say, not everything in these books is easily understandable either, but neither is it accurate necessarily as far as dates go. With the astronomy that he is offering, the dates seem far too ancient. I mean, that's not what it's saying. It's saying that the dates can't be used appropriately, and neither can the astronomy that he's offering, possibly because the astronomy is not as well understood by the general reader. Still, general statements may be nonetheless accurate. Initially, the colony at Eridu could have been founded by inhabitants from the south, Lockyer says, something equally suggested by Nimrod as son of Cush, where Cush means Ethiopia. But, of course, we know that Cush actually began in the north, not in the south, so that's a bit of a red herring, as we say in English, for a misconception. The evidence for this assertion is the god of Eridu, a goat fish called Ea or Aya or Yah, also connected to Capricorn. Now, the reason why we're saying the evidence for this assertion, which assertion are we talking about? That they could have been founded, the colony at Eridu could have been founded by inhabitants from the south, because the goat fish called Yah is connected to Capricorn, and Capricorn is a southern constellation, okay? So, but this could explain how Tammuz, the son of Yah, the sun god of early Eridu, Tammuz, that is, was the god of the winter sun and not the summer sun, because that would put him south of the equator, where Capricorn was. Mr. Lockyer notes that their worship gradually shifts. Tammuz becomes Nergal, who becomes midsummer sun. Then he becomes Marduk, son of Yah, as spring sun at Babylon, when cult of vernal equinox is brought from the north. The orientation of Egyptian pyramids east-west is here one point of proof offered by Lockyer for correlation, as only at equinox, or sunrise, sunset, truly east-west. Greek temples oriented to the Pleiades is another one, where the Pleiades, in footnote 8, is believed by some to be the Kaima constellation of the Bible, and anyway, is sometimes associated with spring pleasantness. Brick construction at early Shinar was lost over time, but the argument is that the Egyptian construction, as it favors east-west orientation, suggests an invasive settlement from the north, where equinox was favored. Now, of course, there may not have been an actual invasion. It might have just been settlers coming to Egypt for the very first time. The worship of Zoroaster, or the sun, is preeminent in Shinar with Nimrod, or Menes, as we wrote above. Nimrod, also known as Menes, and the summer solstice sun god Amun-Re, later is so in Egypt. It's preeminent in Egypt, the summer solstice Amun-Re worship. Both would have us believe that the Bible is recenter, but nothing can separate us believers from God's love. That's from Romans chapter 8, verses 35 to 39. That ends our study in the Wild Road article for today, little children. Today, we have also the proverb from Proverbs chapter 17, verse 6. The crown of old men is the grandsons, and the beauty of sons is their fathers. A beautiful sentiment, is it not? Now, Leviticus chapter 4, our final portion of study for today. And Jehovah went on to speak to Moses, saying, speak to the sons of Israel, saying, in case the soul sins by mistake in any of the things that Jehovah commands should not be done, and he actually does one of them, if the priest, the anointed one, sins, so as to bring guiltiness upon the people, then he must present for his sin that he has committed a sound young bull to Jehovah as a sin offering. And he must bring the bull to the entrance of the tent of meeting before Jehovah, and must lay his hand upon the bull's head, and he must slaughter the bull before Jehovah. And the priest, the anointed one, must take some of the bull's blood and bring it into the tent of meeting, and the priest must dip his finger in the blood and spatter some of the blood 7 times before Jehovah, in front of the curtain of the holy place. This is in the holy tabernacle. He has to bring it into the tent of meeting in the holy place, but not the most holy. It's in front of the curtain that leads to the most holy place. And the priest must put some of the blood upon the horns of the altar of perfumed incense, which is inside the tent in that holy place, before Jehovah, which is in the tent of meeting, and all the rest of the bull's blood he will pour at the base of the altar of burnt offering, which is at the entrance of the tent of meeting. Outside the tent of meeting is the burnt offering altar. As to all the fat of the bull of the sin offering, this bull of the sin offering, he will lift up from it the fat that covers over the intestines, even all the fat that is over the intestines and the two kidneys, and the fat that is upon them, the same as that upon the loins. And as for the appendage upon the liver, he will remove it along with the kidneys. It will be the same as what is lifted up of a bull of the communion sacrifice. And the priest must make them smoke upon the altar of burnt offering. But as for the skin of the bull and all its flesh, along with its head and its shanks and its intestines and its dung, you must have the entire bull taken out to the outskirts of the camp to a clean place where the fatty ashes are poured out. And you must burn it upon wood in the fire. Where the fatty ashes are poured out, it should be burned. Now, if the entire assembly of Israel makes a mistake, and the matter has been hidden from the eyes of the congregation, in that they have done one of all the things that Jehovah commands should not be done, and so have become guilty, and the sin that they have committed against it has become known, Then the congregation must present a young bull for a sin offering and must bring it before the tent of meeting. And the older men of the assembly must lay their hands upon the bull's head before Jehovah, and the bull must be slaughtered before Jehovah. Then the priest, the anointed one, must bring some of the bull's blood into the tent of meeting, and the priest must dip his finger into some of the blood and spatter it seven times before Jehovah in front of the curtain. And he will put some of the blood upon the horns of the altar that is before Jehovah, which is in the tent of meeting, and all the rest of the blood he will pour at the base of the altar of burnt offering, which is at the entrance outside the tent of meeting. And he will lift up all its fat from it, and he must make it smoke on the altar. And he must do to the bull just as he did to the other bull of the sin offering. That is the way he will do to it, and the priest must make an atonement for them, and so it must be forgiven them. And he must have the bull taken out to the outskirts of the camp and must burn it, just as he burned the first bull. It is a sin offering for the congregation. When a chieftain sins, and he does commit unintentionally one of all the things that Jehovah his God commands should not be done, and so he has become guilty, or his sin that he has committed against the commandment has been made known to him, then he must bring as his offering a male kid of the goats, a sound one. And he must lay his hand upon the head of the young goat and slaughter it in the place where the burnt offering is regularly slaughtered before Jehovah. It is a sin offering. And the priest must take some of the blood of the sin offering with his finger and put it upon the horns of the altar of burnt offering. And he will pour the rest of its blood at the base of the altar of burnt offering. And he will make all its fat smoke on the altar like the fat of the communion sacrifice. And the priest must make an atonement for him for his sin, and so it must be forgiven him. And if any soul of the people of the land sins unintentionally by his doing one of the things that Jehovah commands should not be done, and he does become guilty, or his sin that he has committed has been made known to him, then he must bring as his offering a female kid of the goats, a sound one, for his sin that he has committed, and he must lay his hand upon the head of the sin offering and slaughter the sin offering in the same place as the burnt offering, and the priest must take some of its blood with his finger and put it upon the horns of the altar of burnt offering. And he will pour all the rest of its blood at the base of the altar. And he will remove all its fat, just as the fat was removed from off the communion sacrifice. And the priest must make it smoke on the altar as a restful odor to Jehovah. And the priest must make an atonement for him, and so it must be forgiven him. But if he would bring a lamb as his offering for a sin offering, a sound female lamb is what he should bring. And he must lay his hand upon the head of the sin offering and slaughter it as a sin offering in the place where the burnt offering is regularly slaughtered. And the priest must take some of the blood of the sin offering with his finger and put it upon the horns of the altar of burnt offering. And he will pour all the rest of its blood at the base of the altar. And he will remove all its fat, the same as the fat of the young ram of the communion sacrifice is regularly removed. And the priest must make them smoke on the altar upon Jehovah's offerings made by fire. And the priest must make an atonement for him for his sin that he has committed, and so it must be forgiven him. That's the end of Leviticus chapter 4. I love you all. Thank you for listening and watching. Have a wonderful day. Praise Jehovah. May Jehovah bless us. And may we remember that we need to confess that Jesus came in the flesh, in order to have the inspiration from God or the spirit of the truth. So, it is June 4th, 2023. The time is 14:45 hours Eastern Daylight Time. And on my behalf, this is Cammie and Sissy saying bye for now.